This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Six.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Peter today, no Andrew today, so you unfortunately are all stuck with me. I am Anthony Pusick. This, of course, is ENN on this Labor Day Monday. And this portion of the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by PGA Tour Superstores. Shop with the pros at your local New York and New Jersey area PGA Tour Superstores and save $20 off your purchase of $100 or more by mentioning 98.7 ESPN at checkout. Exclusions apply. See website for exclusion details. Dan, how are you today, sir?
Hot dogs, hamburgers, fireworks, all that good stuff.
But not on this Labor Day. And by the way, you mentioned it. Can you believe that it actually is Labor Day, that we've made it to this point? Like, where did the summer go?
Well, much like all of this year, it's gone by pretty fast. Things have kind of flown by during the pandemic here. And another thing, actually, that we were talking about, Dan, with that PGA read, the guys were talking about it last week. Do you think the cashiers know when you say 98.7 at checkout what that's supposed to mean for them?
No.
Like,
I have no idea.
They go back to the back room and say, hey, guys, guess what? They just said 98.7 sent them. Let's make sure we let them know.
Well, see, that
if
falls
anything,
on
crazy.
It falls on management more than anything because they have to make sure that the cashiers are up to speed with some of the promotional things that they have going on, like our 98.7 promotion.
Sure.
So that when a good customer goes in there, mentions the radio station, they're like, oh, yeah, I know what that means. That means, what is it, $20 off or whatever? Yeah, $20 off 100 or more. So, yeah, or maybe they have like a card posted on the register or at the counter or something like that.
And you know what? Maybe another place would have that problem. Not the PGA Tour Superstore. They do an amazing job over there.
Yes.
And I'm sure that you will get your deal when you mention 98.7. Dan, we have one more drop from you. Here it is. It's right here.
He's a sweater.
You remember that one?
Oh, absolutely. Love that
sweater.
One.
He's a sweater. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is in reference to Aroldis Chapman. But it could, quite frankly, also be in reference to Edwin Diaz, at least for Met fans, because they sweat it out almost every time he takes the mound in a save situation, and today was no different. Edwin Diaz gives up two runs in the ninth inning. The walk-off on a Kai Boom single to center field. You heard it earlier from Masson. Mets lose the game 4-3 to the Nationals. They are now back at 500 at 69-69 on the season.
Nice.
Luis Rojas. Yes, very good. Luis Rojas was asked after the game, are you going to stick with Edwin Diaz as your closer?
Yeah, I mean, Edwin's done it for us all year. Like, we're not making the command a little bit, and then he bounced back and he started throwing more strikes. So this is last two games where he's done it. So for sure he can work on things like this. We have other guys throwing the ball well in the bullpen, and they can come in high leverage situations and keep the game close or up for us. I mean, we trust our entire bullpen and Edwin as well.
See, the Zoom tried to prevent him from saying yes, Edwin Diaz will be our closer for the rest of the season. But Dan, now they're four games out in the division. Taking a look at the wild card standings here, they're 4.5 behind now the San Diego Padres. These are games, and especially against teams like the Marlins and the Nationals, and while the Mets have done very well on this stretch against these teams, 7-3, you can't lose games like this. You should win this game. I know that they didn't hit as well as they should have, 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. Pete Alonso with his 30th home run and a big one, and he seems to come up clutch when he needs to for this team. But some glaring things here, 28-42 on the road. This Mets team is not good on the road.
No, they're not good on the road. They don't hit in the clutch, as you said. I mean, the runners in scoring position, that's something that's plagued them all year here. But, you know, to go back to what Rojas just said, and I know that they're going to ask the question. They've asked that question many, many times. Every time it seems like Edwin Diaz stubs his toe or blows his save. What is he supposed to say? You know what I mean? Like, if they're asking him, hey, Louie, are you still confident that Edwin Diaz is your closer or should be your closer? He can't say no. You know what I mean? Like, it's September the 6th. Like, they can't go out. They can't go shopping at Closers R Us and go bring in somebody else to get the final three outs of a game. I mean, it's ride or die with this guy. The relief pitcher that I actually have the most confidence in, and the Mets probably have the most confidence in, is Aaron Loop.
Right.
But he's not closer material. I mean, in the past, you could even, like, before this season, I could even say, well, Seth Lugo. But Seth Lugo's been very up and down this year. And, you know, he missed a lot of time at the beginning of the year. I don't know if he's gotten into a proper groove or if he will at all this year. So, unfortunately, you're left with Diaz. And do I have faith in him? No. Should Met fans have faith in him? Absolutely not. You're going to have to just cross your fingers and pray for the best and hope that you have a big enough lead to where not even he can squander the advantage.
And look, you pick up Brad Hand off the scrap heap.
I'm glad you brought him up. can I say a few things about Brad Hand?
Sure.
Can I real quick? And I've got no, and this is nothing an attack on him personally.
Pitched
but
an
it's
inning
just,
today?
He pitched an inning, good for him, and he didn't set the game on fire. Congratulations to Brad Hand. But let's give a little rewind to Brad Hand here, okay? He was acquired by the Toronto Blue Jays at the trade deadline this year. Okay, Toronto, who is a good team, has eyes on the postseason, and Toronto's Achilles heel for much of the season was their bullpen.
Wouldn't know it today.
So they decide, right? And then they said, you know what? We need some help in the bullpen. Let's go get that Brad Hand guy. But they even did more than that. They didn't just stop at Brad Hand, which was good by them. Brad Hand was so bad for the Toronto Blue Jays as a hired gun that even Toronto, trying to make the postseason, said, you know what? This guy is more of a detriment than a positive. They basically kicked him to the curb. And the Mets, who were so desperate, took Toronto's garbage and said, hey, Brad, welcome aboard, buddy. Because that's the dire straits that they were in. Why should Met fans have any expectations that Brad Hand is going to do anything for him this year?
No, and look, obviously, when we talked about Lugo's struggles, he pitched well today. Familia pitched well today. Hand pitched well today. It was Diaz that was the problem. But you also have to realize, as you pointed out, Dan, that if you're picking up scraps from Toronto, you have some questions about your bullpen and the fact that there aren't many guys. I mean, Trevor Williams gave up 10 hits today in 5 innings. You're lucky he went 5 innings. He's not going to give you length. I don't think you're expecting him to give you 6-7 inning performances. But you need help in that bullpen because you don't have the starting depth that you thought, because Syndergaard had a setback. DeGrom has been in and out of the IL now, seemingly. Now, of course, been on the IL for a while, but was in and out of the IL in the middle months of the summer for so long. And Stroman and Walker have stumbled a little bit here. Walker and Stroman of recent has been pretty good, but you needed some arms in that bullpen. And, you know, Luis Rojas also talked about the hitting with runners in scoring position today.
We probably could have won more games, one run for sure. And I know we're talking about Edwin just now, talking to Steve, but let's talk about the offense too, right? And we know that's been like the hot topic almost the entire season about our outcomes in games. Like, we went 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position today. And we had chances to score more runs and to be probably a different game than a 3-2 in the ninth. So I think that's why most of those games weren't probably won for the most part. The pitching have been responsible to keep us close, actually. And I know it's a tough loss. And, you know, we talk about that ninth inning and the walks blended with the single there. But, you know, once again, 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. You know, you just got to finish. You got to deliver. You got to score the runs that you're setting yourself up to score. And it's happened repeatedly for us this season.
And he's right. The pitching hasn't been bad. But when you give Edwin Diaz a 3-2 lead in the ninth, you hope that he closes it out. Obviously, if the game was 7-2 or 8-2, he wouldn't have been in the game. Then you probably went with Trevor May or somebody like that. But in a 3-2 game against the Washington Nationals, who traded everybody away at the deadline, you need to win that game.
They waved the white flag. Right. And look, they had 12 hits.
Right.
They had plenty of traffic on the bases. Plenty of opportunities, as you said. It's not the hitting necessarily, because I said, dozen hits. That's more than enough. It's the hitting in the clutch. It's about getting the timely hit when you have opportunities to break a game open, to tack on runs. And look, I mean, over the weekend, you know, they had a 9-run game. They had a 13-run game yesterday. Like, I was watching that game yesterday in the ninth inning when they had, I don't know how many they put up in the ninth. I couldn't even remember. Was it 6 runs, 7? I mean, it was some crazy, you know, Pilar had the grand slam. And then they had a baker's dozen on the board. I'm saying to myself, you know what? Save some of those runs for tomorrow. You know, you still got another game tomorrow. Save some of these runs. And then today, they couldn't buy an extra one when they needed it.
Yeah,
and that's why they go home a loser.
A six spot in the ninth inning. Lindor home run. Pilar home run. Conforto RBI single. All the guys that you want to be coming through. I mean, Kevin Pilar has been a great story for this team this year. For what he's been able to do both off the bench and just seems like as a leader in that clubhouse. Especially when he took that fastball early on in the year. And
it was
a really scary situation for him. But to come back the way he did with a couple black eyes saying, I want to play for this team. That was something in a season where there's been a lot of things you want to turn your head away from with the Mets. Kevin Pillar, Taijuan Walker, those are two nice pieces. Now 7-3 in the last 10, Dan. I know how you feel about
pre-All-Star break, Taijuan Walker. Post-All-Star break. Like pre-All-Star break, Taijuan Walker has DirecTV. Post-All-Star break has Taijuan Walker has cable. You know,
Don't be like Taijuan Walker.
Yeah, we want the DirecTV Taijuan Walker, the All-Star one, not the one who has cable and is pitching to a 7.5 ERA after the All-Star break.
A manager in New York once said it's not what you want. That is not what you want. And that manager actually has a 2.5 game lead on the Mets right now. According to ESPN's website, there's a 7.1% chance the Mets make the playoffs. Not sure where they're getting that particular stat from. 7-3 in the last 10, as we said. This has been a Nationals-Marlins extravaganza for them after having to face the Giants and the Dodgers as much as they have. They get to bounce back. And essentially, if they complete this the way I think they will, Dan, kind of end up in the exact same spot that they were before they started the Giants-Dodgers 13-game stretch. Because they had about 15 games with the Nationals and the Marlins. They'll have 13 games with the Giants and the Dodgers. Those will probably balance out. I know how you feel. I know how Don feels about this. Do the Mets have a chance to make the playoffs? Do you see them making the playoffs?
Do they have a chance? Yes.
Right.
Am I confident they're going to make the playoffs? No. And I'll give you a couple of examples.
Do they still have to win the NL East to make the playoffs in your mind?
I still believe that is their best path, yes.
Okay.
Just because there's too many other teams that you're going to have to deal with for that wild card. Because it's Cincinnati, it's St. Louis. Now St. Louis is a live out. Even though they had as you think the Met loss was bad today? The Cardinal loss yesterday in Milwaukee was a million times worse. When you had a four-run lead in the ninth inning, you give up a five spot and lose on a walk-off grand slam. That is against the team they were chasing in the Milwaukee Brewers. And St. Louis hasn't been able to get off the mat today because they're losing at home to the Dodgers. A Dodger team, by the way, that played the Sunday night game that had to fly across country, lose a couple of hours, and play a day game in St. Louis. But I digress. Here's the problem with the Mets right now. All right. As I said before, they played 138 games, Anthony. 138. Pretty decent sample size. This isn't just like a couple of weeks here, a couple of weeks there. You are what you are that many games into the season. They're 500. They are mediocre. They are average because they deserve to be. All right? And you mentioned the schedule. They've got 7 left with the Marlins. After that, they play real baseball teams. Milwaukee, Yankees, Red Sox, Braves, Phillies, Cardinals. All teams that have winning records. You know what the Met record is this year against teams that are over 500?
Not good.
They're 33-43. They're 10 games under 500. So magically, we're supposed to believe that in the final 20 games of the year, they're going to snap their fingers and all of a sudden start to resemble a baseball team that they haven't been for almost 140 games? I just can't see it happening.
And of course, tomorrow they start that series, as you mentioned, with Miami. In Miami, Carlos Carrasco versus Edward Cabrera at 6:40. But of course, the Mets weren't the only team to disappoint New York baseball fans today. The Yankees came out, and it wasn't good. It was an 8-0 loss to the Blue Jays. Now, the Blue Jays are a good team. This isn't like losing to the Orioles, but when you lose 2 out of 3 to the Orioles over the weekend, and you're in a situation where, luckily, the Tampa Bay Rays squeaked it out against Boston in extra innings, so they actually kept
Boston. And that's good for the Yankees.
Yes. Yep. Kept Boston at bay, so they're still a half game lead ahead of them in the wild card. But Seattle's only 2.5 out. Toronto's now only 3 out, and the A's are 3.5 out. So back to the situation the Yankees are in, where they have to start worrying about. Forget about. Oh well, they're easily going to host the wild card game. They're in trouble. They now have a situation where they have to start winning baseball games again. Now Gerrit Cole on the mound tomorrow, of course, is your stopper, as you mentioned, Dan. Aaron Boone, after the game, he said a lot of things. He did say, I don't know, a couple of times, but he did talk about going 2-7 in the team's last 9 games.
Always concerning. I'm concerned when we're in the middle of winning 7 in a row. So, yeah, it's a concern. These are big-time games right now. These are important games. I want us to play well. We need to dig ourselves out of this little funk we've been in for a week and get that opportunity tomorrow. But I'm concerned when we're winning big or when we're going through a tough stretch. And we will pull out of it, but we need to get it going.
Well, I'll give Aaron Boone credit here, and I think this is one of the reasons that the Yankee front office likes him so much. He's pretty even keel with his answers, whether they're winning or whether they're losing. On the 13-game win streak, you didn't hear a super jovial Aaron Boone. He was happy with the way things were going. He was happy that the team was getting some clutch hits here and there when they needed to. But at the same time, you know that when they go through a stretch like this where they lose a series they really shouldn't have lost to the Baltimore Orioles, not because of the way they played, just simply because of the team Baltimore's trotting out there. I mean, the games they lost, they should have lost. Quite frankly, they could have got swept. But you're not supposed to play that way against a team like that. Toronto's a good team. Now, their bullpen, their pitching staff, as we talked about, leaves a lot to be desired, and you only scratch across five hits. But also, Dan, we saw it. Gio Urshela with an error. Gleyber Torres with an error. Now these things that were creeping up in May and June that were causing this team problems, along with not being able to hit, are rearing their ugly heads. And Joey Gallo, as you said, hitting under 200, and I think he's struck out almost half as many times as at-bats he's had with the Yankees. So this team needs to figure it out offensively.
You know, I'm surprised, and it wouldn't shock me. Like, are we going to find out tomorrow that the Yankees are going to have one of those team meetings, you know, clubhouse meetings before tomorrow's game? Because after all, they're in a little bit of a funk. And you know who's pitching tomorrow for the Bombers? The stopper.
That'd be Cole.
That's Mr. Cole. So it's always wise to call a team meeting when you know you're giving the ball to your ace. Because then you look like a genius if you go out there and win. Not so much that it had to do with the meeting, but the fact that your best pitcher took the baseball, and generally good things happen when he's on the mound. Either way, I think that it is certainly the most opportune time that Cole is due up next year to pitch. And, you know, look, Steven Matz is going for the Blue Jays. They've seen plenty of Steven Matz over the last few years from his time with the Mets. This is a lineup which is geared towards the Yankees having, or a matchup that's geared towards the Yankees having success tomorrow. And they should get back in the win column. I think they stop the bleeding tomorrow. And if they don't, then that's cause for a little bit more concern here, I think. And you know that the conversation will probably adjust itself to that.
No question about it.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Now, on the football side, we talked a little football. I'm sure we'll have a little bit more later on in the show because now, of course, the show is 3-7. Back to 3-7 starting
right.
This week. Started today, in fact. 3-7 Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN. And yes, the New York Giants running back Saquon Barkley cleared yet another hurdle. Obviously, he had first contact in practice last week, had no issues. And if all goes well on Wednesday's practice, he's expected to be on the field Sunday week one versus the Broncos. Now, of course, everybody was questioning if Barkley would have enough reps, how he would look. Of course, they didn't use him in the preseason, but how he would look against the Patriots. Everything seemed to go well there. The New York Giants reporter for ESPN, and of course, a frequent guest on 98.7, Jordan Renan, was on earlier on Bart and Han with Pat O'Keefe. That's a lot of names to keep together, but you guys will figure
names.
It out. He asked him, will Barkley play week one?
So last week he goes and he faces his first practice with contact, right? No issues heading into today. One more padded practice on Wednesday. All goes well there. I think you should see Saquon Barkley on the field week one. Now, what does that mean? I mean, we're not going to see Saquon Barkley out on the field as if it was, you know, week one last season, where I think he played like 92% of the snaps, I think the number was. Like, that's not realistic. So for fantasy owners, and I know a lot of people care about that, that's a big part of this, right? Yeah, or even Giants fans, because it's going to partially affect the game. You're not going to see Saquon get 25 touches, 20 plus touches. I think the realistic thing is you'll see him play, but really split time maybe with Devontae Booker. You'll see him maybe get like 10 to 15 touches, whereas, you know, in a normal game, Saquon Barkley would get around 20 touches.
I think if you're a Giants fan, you have to be happy with that, right, Dan? I mean, no real preseason work outside of practices with the New England Patriots. If he is any type of a factor and comes out of it healthy on Sunday against the Broncos, I think you have to feel pretty good heading into Thursday against Washington in week two.
Well, not only that, you're talking about going up against, you mentioned both teams, two teams that have good defenses. You know, the Broncos' strength is on the defensive side of the ball. Same thing with the Washington football team. And it's two games in 5 days. So for a guy that we have not seen, shoulder the load for as long as it's been here with Saquon because of the injury, I think you have to use caution here a little bit. And not to mention the fact, remember, we were talking about it earlier in the show as to the big concern that you have about the Giants, you know, on the surface going into this season. It's the offensive line and how they're going to be able to fare. So anybody that follows football will tell you they know that the offensive line is going to be the key cog that fuels the running game. So if Barkley's not maybe up to speed yet, plus the offensive line is not maybe equipped to go out there and open up these huge running lanes, you know what other teams are going to do? They're going to put how many guys in the box and then dare Daniel Jones to drop back and beat them over the top. So that's probably how teams are going to at least stack up and game plan against that Giants offense until they can prove that they could do one of those two things successfully.
And, you know, we said we'd hear from Robert Saleh later, but there's something that happened with him, and now he gets to join. I believe he'll be a guest on the Michael Kay Show this year. Hopefully, we hope anyway. Here he is earlier in his press conference.
Sorry, guys. I ate almonds before I came up here.
There's a little choked up.
Is he okay? Is he okay? Or is the coach okay? Is he going to be able to coach on Sunday?
Well, he made it through that, but if he is a guest on the Michael Kay Show this season, he's going to fit right in because being choked up is something that we're very much used to here.
But they did overcome it and take the lead. You have to realize that in hockey...
Well, there's two things. Excuse me, getting choked up. I'm talking about Dom.
Can I tell you something?
What's that?
I'm being dead serious that when you just played like the one of Don and Peter there, like, it actually made my eyes water a little bit. I don't know if it has that kind of, like, cause and effect impact on other human beings when they hear something like that. You know, it's kind of like a Pavlov's dog type thing. When I hear them getting choked up, like, you know, they say, like, when you see somebody else yawn, you end up yawning. Like, I heard that, and it started to make my eyes water as if I was getting choked up to a certain degree.
Now, of course, we'll get some more interesting stuff from Robert Saleh a little later in the show. I just thought that was a nice way to say, Robert Saleh, you are welcome on the Michael Kay Show because we all get a little choked up here and there.
How is there not an almond sponsor like for that spot? There has to. I don't know if it's sponsored yet or who it is, but shouldn't it be an almond sponsor because
of it's got to be on the way. It has to be on the way. If an almond company sees that and doesn't take advantage of it, I mean, what are they doing? Bad marketing.
It's product placement. Positivity. That's what you got to do.
Well, Dan, the last time you were on here with Don and I did an ENN, I said that there was breaking news, and it was that Trevor Lawrence was named the Jaguars starting
quarterback. Yes.
I'm not going to get you too excited here. We talked about it a little earlier. Tyrod Taylor was officially named the Texans starting quarterback this year. David Culley made the announcement today, and Taylor will make his debut for the franchise on Sunday against those Jaguars led by Trevor Lawrence. Of course, that means that Deshaun Watson, who obviously has off-the-field issues, 22 civil lawsuits with allegations of sexual assault and inappropriate behavior, is on the 53-man roster. He hasn't been put on the exempt list or anything like that, but he will be a healthy scratch on game days. Quite frankly, I think this is the only way that Houston can go in this situation. I don't think that with everything going on with Deshaun Watson, unless his name is cleared or he is, we get some clarity on these civil lawsuits, that he's going to play. And quite frankly, this is just going to be a very long season for Houston Texans fans.
No, you're right. And look, you talk about those 22 people that have come forward with claims against him, and the NFL's dragging their feet with this investigation. The police department down there in Houston are dragging their feet as well. So unless you have clarity on either one of those fronts, number one, the Texans aren't going to throw him onto the football field because then they can have it taken away from them at any time. Number two, if you are another team out there that might have had consideration of trading for a Deshaun Watson, you're not going to meet Houston's asking price, which at last check from Nick Caserio was what, 3 first round picks plus? Who is going to give up that type of draft capital for a guy that may not even be available for you to play? So it's pretty much a holding pattern. It stinks for Houston. And look, Deshaun Watson brought a lot of this on himself, according to all the allegations that are out there here. But if you're the Texans, this is a situation you find yourself in. The organization is a mess from top to bottom here. But Anthony, I'm going to say something right now, and you could crucify me on Sunday evening if I am wrong, but I am pretty, pretty certain in this conviction that I have. And that is that despite all of the issues that plague the franchise right now, it will be the Houston Texans and not the Jacksonville Jaguars that walk off that field at NRG Stadium on Sunday afternoon victorious. in week one on Sunday. That is correct.
You know what, Dan? I'd like to say that I think that's crazy. I don't think you're wrong. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence has a lot of hype around him, but that team did not look good in the preseason. There's rumors that, you know, Urban Meyer's, you know, kind of grinding some gears over there, that there are some older players that don't take too kindly to his type of coaching. This could be a real mess for Trevor Lawrence, which would be unfortunate because of how talented he is. But no, I don't think that's a crazy thought at all. I think people might think that that's a little shocking, but we shall see.
Jaguars are going to be in for a long year. And look, Houston, that might be their only win for the rest of the season. Let's not forget, last year the Jaguars won their first game of the season. They beat the Indianapolis Colts at home. They caused Phillip Rivers to make a couple of miscues. And then they didn't win another game the rest of the year. That could be the same script that follows the Texans. Because the Texans are a mess. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're a disaster. But they'll win this Sunday, and then they could close out the rest of the season losing every other game. It's possible.
And you don't want that false sense of security of, oh, wow, maybe things aren't so bad here in Houston. No, I promise you, they're not going. It's not going to be a good time in Houston. There is one thing, Dan, that me and you spoke about last night that yeah. I wanted to get into. So Notre Dame, the ninth ranked at the time, Fighting Irish on ABC, defeated Florida State. They were up by 18 in the fourth quarter, blew that lead. Then FSU basically iced their own kicker after he hit a 50-yard field goal because they questioned the spot of the ball, questioning whether it was a fumble by the FSU quarterback Mackenzie Milton or if it was an incomplete pass. Turned out it was an incomplete pass. They move the field goal 17 yards ahead, and then he misses it. And then Notre Dame comes down, and of course with the college football rules, they start at the 25, they get themselves in field goal range, they kick the field goal, they win the game. The big story was after the game when on ABC, Brian Kelly said this.
I'm in favor of execution. Maybe our entire team needs to be executed after tonight. I mean, we just didn't execute very well.
Now, my initial thought to that was that probably sounded better in his head.
Sure.
And I texted you basically that same thing. You told me what Brian Kelly meant. Brian Kelly then had to tell everybody what he meant.
Oh, it's an old John McKay quote. I was kidding. It was tongue in cheek. It wasn't funny. It's an old John McKay quote that he used after the game. So I was talking and you know, making a joke about it. Why it was taken serious. Are you people crazy?
Now, I never for one second thought that Brian Kelly meant he was going to execute all of his players after the game. I'm sure he meant it as a joke. And I'm sure that he meant it as tongue-in-cheek. For me, it just seemed like he didn't, talking about execution, he didn't execute the joke very well in my mind.
Right.
I think that he probably thought that was really funny, and I think that he just didn't say it as well as he would have liked to have said it, if that makes sense.
He fumbled the delivery. Simple.
Exactly.
I mean, that's exactly what he did there. And look, we live in an age now where, especially with social media, something like that could blow up and go viral and you know, the flames could be fanned. And that's exactly what happened last night. And I got to be honest with you, not that I was shocked that it took on a life of its own like it did. Which, you know, in this day and age and this, you know, PC society that we live in, you expect things like that to happen. The thing that shocked me, Anthony, is that there are people. And I'm not going to name names. They know who they are.
Me.
There are people. It's a little bit different. You are of a younger generation, okay? And you're very knowledgeable when it comes to sports matters here. But this, you know, the Buccaneers, the John McKay thing, that was in the mid-70s. There are some people that do this for a living who are of age, so to speak, and should know these things and make it their livelihood, who expose themselves as maybe not being as well-read last night with their immediate reaction on social media because they would not know who John McKay was or those Tampa Bay Buccaneers teams were if they fell on them. And that, to me, is the most egregious thing more than anything, is that you got people out there masquerading as frauds that seem to be so-called experts or are considered experts when it comes to the NFL. And for those that don't know, all right, back then, when expansion teams were created in sports, like now we're kind of spoiled. Remember, 2 years ago, a few years back with the Vegas Golden Knights in the NHL, an expansion team, they went to the Stanley Cup Finals in their first season, right? Like, that's not supposed to happen. There's supposed to be significant growing pains. Case in point, the Buccaneers, when they came into the league in 1976, they began their existence, Anthony, by losing 26 consecutive games. Like, the struggle was real.
That's
so
not good.
John, you know, John McKay, who was the head coach then, asked about his football team and asked about his team's execution. He said, yeah, I'm all in favor of it. You know, kind of as a joke, ha-ha, as opposed to them not executing on the field between the white lines. So that's all it meant. It was innocent. Kelly could have maybe phrased it and gotten out of his mouth a little bit better there, but the world we live in now, of course, people are going to make a big deal about it.
Well, in typical ENN fashion, I have gone over the clock, and that will do it today for ENN on this Monday Labor Day evening.
Tremendous job.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.